Tonight I'm going to give a little bit less of one of my patented psychological talks. Don't worry, you can always come next week and I'll fall back into that rut of... tonight I thought I'd be thematically appropriate, which I do every once in a great while to pretend that I am. And I'm going to give a little bit of a talk on... I'm going to do a different kind of Thanksgiving talk. So one of the early mistakes that meditators and spiritual practitioners make is we realize that there's a lot of stress in the mind, a lot of obsessive thinking, papancha, as the Buddha called it, and there's this desire to achieve some tranquility or calmness in our lives, and what we try to do is empty the mind out of all thinking. And guess what? You can't do it. Not going to happen. You're not going to do it. You're not going to be able to suddenly, after going around your entire life thinking thoughts of what should I do today? Me, 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 me. Where should I go? Me, 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 me. What's going on with my life? Me, 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 me. Suddenly have all the thoughts disappear. And in fact, if you even try to do that, you're going to drive yourself nuts because it's a futile task. And the Buddha never said anywhere in the path that the way to tranquility was by tossing out all the thoughts. In fact, the factors of the path, like right intention and right effort, if you read them, they're all about using skillful thoughts that don't cause suffering to push out of the mind the thoughts that cause suffering. So it's not about trying to suddenly not think, especially when you're meditating. It's not about just like, why can't I get rid of these thoughts? Why can't I stop thinking about myself? Why can't I stop worrying about the future? Why can't I stop obsessing about my financial situation? The idea is to acknowledge that the brain is, in fact, a thinking machine. And it takes a long time to train it to get to the point where it will feel comfortable and less vulnerable by stopping thinking. So the way we do that, or by giving pause to thinking, so for a long time in the practice is all about replacing unskillful thoughts with skillful ones. Now, of course, some examples of unskillful thoughts are the self-centered, delusional ones, like, what are other people thinking about me? What's going to happen to me in the future? How do I compare with other people? Why don't I have as much? That kind of stuff that really builds a whole story about self and walls us in a separate land. One of my favorite alcoholic sayings is that an alcoholic believes there's two kinds of people in the world, me and everybody else. So that's the kind of thinking that those self-centered thinking and stressful thoughts develop. The other two kinds of core thinking that develops suffering and stress is, of course, hatred and anger. The idea that if we could just get rid of that one person or that one thing in life, we would be happy. That our happiness is contingent upon getting rid of someone or something. And then there is the exact opposite. There's lust and craving, which is, oh, if only I could get that person or that one thing, then I would be happy. They're both basically mirror images of each other. The idea is that I can't be happy now with what I have. Before I'm allowed to be happy, I have to kill someone or get someone to love me. That's what I need. I'm never going to be happy unless I kill that person and love that person. So it's this contingency, this making happiness conditional, that we know that we are in trouble. And also there's the third, which is delusional self-centeredness, which is I won't be happy until I figure out who I really am, know everything about myself and what everybody else thinks about me and everything that's going to happen to me in the future and everything that happened to me in the past, who I really am. Once I got all those little questions figured out, then I can be happy. Well, of course, none of those things ever really work, because generally when we kill someone in our minds, drive them away, make them alienated from us, then we find someone else that we have to kill before we can be happy. Or when we get that thing that we've always wanted, that apartment, that relationship, that job, that bonus, that words of wonderful praise, whenever we get the thing we really want, it lasts for all of about the shelf life of yogurt, and then we need something else to make us feel really good. So those strategies don't really work. So thankfully, the Buddha offered us kinds of thoughts that would work to relieve the suffering that these thoughts create and would work as antidotes to these unskillful thinkings. So, for example, an antidote to hatred and anger would be goodwill. Instead of always walking around in this place of feeling, if only I could get rid of my roommate, my boss, my family, my friends, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my co-workers, whatever, instead to practice a sense of goodwill. When we do that, we begin to realize that we can, in fact, achieve happiness without needing to change the world or make our happiness contingent upon something happening. We have all the tools we need right now. Goodwill feels good when you think it. Anger doesn't feel good. Anger makes us stressed out. It tensions the shoulders. It makes us all tight. It releases cortisol. It's a very, very stressful form of thinking. Feeling goodwill actually works with a part of the nerve called the vagus nerve, which allows the body to breathe comfortably. It creates white blood cells and releases serotonin. It's a very healthy thing to do. So replacing hatred with goodwill is an extremely skillful practice. Replacing self-centeredness with generosity is an excellent practice. Excellent practice. It takes away this obsession with what, how much do I have? You know, this feeling of never having enough and always focusing on self to focusing on, guess what, another being, someone else, or just the fact that there are people that could use our help. It makes us come from a place of abundance rather than from a place of scarcity. And it makes us feel connected. And again, when we feel when we practice, studies show generosity. There was this wonderful psychological study where they showed that when people were, they had a study group where half of the people were given money and told to spend it on themselves, and the other half were told to spend money that they were given on other people. And 6 months later, none of the people who were told to spend the money on themselves, these were college students, could remember what they spent the money on, nor did they have any bump in their own self-esteem. Whereas 6 months later, the people that spent it on other people not only could remember exactly who they spent it on, what they did, they still felt good about it. So generosity feels good. It gets us out of ourselves, blah, blah, blah. You know the picture. Okay. Now we're getting towards craving. Oh, if only I could get that one thing that will make me happy. If only I could get that perfect job. If only I could get that that perfect girlfriend, boyfriend, apartment, 401k, if only I had a dog that loved me, if only I had a series of friends on Facebook that endlessly loved everything that I posted. So if only we could have this stuff. And of course, the antidote to this, because you will never, ever get a feeling of lasting peace of mind by accumulating or by making a contingent upon other people, other things, this is a very unskillful. In fact, the Buddha said it's one of the roots of suffering, tanha, craving, trying to get our happiness from outside of ourselves. So an antidote to craving is gratitude. Now, the Buddha talked about gratitude in two ways. There's contentment and there's gratitude. Contentment, the Buddha used as a phrase to feel content with the requisites. He said there are four requisites we need in order to practice. We need to have food, clothing, shelter, and medicine. That without those things, we're going to find it very difficult to practice. But he said that we should only try to get enough food, clothes, shelter, and medicine so that we can live comfortably, so that we can live spiritual lives. If we pass by that area of having enough to the area where we're trying to get our happiness from the requisites, we're trying to get our happiness from food. If only I ate enough, I'd be happy. If only I spent enough, I'd be happy. If only I had a bigger house, I'd be happy. That's where the trouble begins. So the contentment with things is not the kind of Thanksgiving speeches you generally see on TV or you hear in certain families where people say, thank God for the roof above our heads. The Buddha would never say such a thing. The Buddha, in fact, said something quite differently. I'm going to read you a quote from the numbered discourses. One does not, for the sake of food, clothes, shelter, or medicine, do anything inappropriate. Not getting what we want in those things, we don't become agitated. For in getting food, clothes, shelter, or medicine, we use it without being attached, without being infatuated with it. We see the drawbacks of being attached to food, clothes, shelter, and medicine, and we understand when it's appropriate to let go. One must never, on account of our contentment with whatever food, clothes, shelter, and medicine we have, exalt or pride or disparage others. So rather than it being this sense of like, oh, it's so wonderful, you know, we have all these things, it's part of contentment is remembering that these are things that we are using for a purpose, which is to have a spiritual life, to feel content with whatever we have, but not to exalt, not to become attached, and not to rub it into other people's face or to compare how much we have with others. It's simply a sense of practicing being content with what we have so that we can focus on the more important things. And now I'm going to get to that. The Buddha was very clear that he wanted people to express gratitude towards other beings, not to things. In our capitalist culture, I have to say that at least once at Dharma Punks. wouldn't be Dharma Punks if I didn't. But we've become used to abundance, right? I mean, we have so many different things, so many clothes, so many shoes, so many food. You go into Whole Foods, it's mind-boggling. It's you know, you want to faint when you pass by, like, the aisles. It's just overwhelming. We have this great abundance. And on top of that, what we've done is we've separated the things from the people who make the things, who bring the things. We've completely hidden the fact that the things that we use came about because other people sweat and suffered and gave of themselves. We tend to say, some people tend to say, thank God for the roof over our heads. But actually, the roof over our heads came from the sweat, labor, and hard work of the people who built the house. And the people who worked hard to be able to help be involved in the building of the house, the architects, the builders, the people who moved the lumbers, the people who did all of the work. We totally forget this because in our society, just like we've hidden ourselves from sickness, we keep the sick in hospitals, we keep the dead in morgues, we hide ourselves from the unpleasantness. We hide ourselves from the animals who give their lives for us to have food, right? We don't see. We say, thank God for the food on our table. Well, actually, we should thank that cow that went, you know, probably unhappily to get a gigantic staple in its head. We are unaware of where these things come from. There is this idea that the only thing that brought about these things that surround us is my hard work. Yes, I work hard for a living. I do my job. Thank God for my job and all the hard work I do so that I can go out and spend some money so that I have a roof over my head. It's all me. And this kind of thinking unfortunately, I know it sounds silly, but this kind of thinking is actually part of the core breakdown in what's going on in our society, in a sense that we no longer acknowledge that all the things we have, all the things that are around us, A, are there because somebody gave of themselves. We are all connected to those people. And then there's a second thing. When we begin to realize that, when we begin to see that everything we have, the water that I'm drinking, the food that I'm going to eat was cut by somebody, was driven here by somebody, was presented by somebody, there's all this labor, and there's very often, yes, even exploitation involved in the food, the shelter, the clothes. When we become aware of how much effort and sometimes suffering goes into it, then what we begin to do is refocus our efforts on developing a form of happiness that's not contingent upon the suffering of others. The less I am dependent upon things for my happiness, things to make me not bored, things to keep me entertained, things to so that I can have, you know, different shoes, so I can have different this's or that's to make me feel complete or to make me feel like a real human being. The less I am dependent upon things, because I'm really, what that means, dependent upon taking away the time and effort and energy from other people, the more I bear that in mind, then I can refocus my mind on balancing it so that I actually have a practice that gives me happiness that is blameless. Happiness that comes from within, that comes from developing a peaceful, compassionate relationship with our own internal experience, never takes anything away from any other being. It doesn't exploit anyone else. It doesn't hurt anyone else. In fact, it's a kind of happiness that we are more likely to share with others when we have. So part, I think, of this experience of being grateful is not only seeing that we are not grateful to things, but grateful to the people that gave so that these things might be there, but also expressing our gratitude by not exploiting people unnecessarily, by not needing to use beyond our needs, by developing a practice, a spiritual practice that will be a source of happiness and peace and contentment that doesn't take anything away. And that's really absolutely beautiful, because as we go into these upcoming years of global warming, you can see just the havoc that we've caused in third world countries. Mexico is, areas of Mexico are just ruined with crime because of our drug addiction here in the States. There's so much impact that our lives have with others that if we're going to ask people to be a part of the solution, what we have to do is give something in return. And that thing I can give, that we can give to others, is a spiritual practice that doesn't use up the earth or use up other people or exploit or harm or injure. Meditation, kindness, generosity, compassion, all these states of mind are blameless. They take from no one else. They encourage us to give. They encourage us to be patient and loving with other people. They don't take anything away from anyone else. So that is tonight's Thanksgiving thoughts. I hope that there's something that will spur you on to questions or to whatever, but I thank you so much for listening, and after the questions I'm going to lead a special gratitude meditation, so if you'd like to stay around for that, please do. Thanks. So, questions, thoughts, agitation, grandstanding. Hi there.
Hi. get yourself to like think of goodwill? Or like what would that look like?
Yeah, totally. Goodwill is, there's, I'm just going to turn this off because...